This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're just everybody off air is talking about Harley Race. Good morning, everyone. Legendary. If you are older, you remember Central States Wrestling, Bob Geigel, Sunday mornings, wrestling, Rufus R. Jones, the freight train. Of course, it would always be Harley Race. I mean, I'm trying to think. Bulldog Bob Brown, of course, was always there. I mean, it was just in the two old ladies, of course, in the front. But they all ended up at the Woodlands, right? Like, that's the other thing I remember when I got into radio was, they, as wrestling had passed them by and people got older, Harley stayed in the game, but many of those other guys ended up being security at the Woodlands as kind of, I think they hired them all as a bit of a stunt, but they could obviously do the job, right?
Right.
But, you know, the freight train, Rufus R. Jones, always one of my personal favorites. And again, you're talking about Bulldog Bob Brown, or then the guys who would come in, the great, was it Kabuki?
The great Kabuki.
And he'd always throw the green stuff in the other guy's eyes. But it was so great. It was always at Memorial Hall every Sunday.
I had a girlfriend that watched it like growing up. That's one of the reasons it made me laugh about the little old ladies. She always talked about the little old ladies.
Yeah, they were there every weekend. It was Murdy and Gertie. They were twins. They were sisters. And I mean, my brothers and I tried to give each other permanent spinal injuries.
You've mentioned that before, that you like thought, no, I'm going to make these moves, and your dad's lucky you didn't.
Oh, you don't understand. You would literally let the other person had to let you do it. That was kind of the rule. Like, we'd try wrestling.
Yeah.
So you would get their head between your thighs, like right up, and then lift their body up and give them an atomic pile driver. Sit down on the hardwood floor. Like, there was no mat to give way. You didn't know to let your legs loose when it was happening so they could pop up instead of being. You would wrench down and atomic pile drive your brother.
You're lucky.
Oh, you'd come off the couch and elbow. I mean, there was suplex. Like, there was never-ending stuff trying to throw a figure four. Like, we could never get it right, right? Like, but you name it. You know, full Nelsons, half Nelsons, you know, whatever it was. We were eating cereal out of plastic butter bowls, a blanket over you, wearing some kind of Kmart whitey-tighty underwears. Four boys and brothers, right?
Right.
Just beating each other's asses on Sunday
Taking
morning.
Taking turns.
Yeah, we weren't at church. We were watching Bob Geigel's Central States Wrestling. And it was legend. It was just how every kid grew up at that age, right? At least in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. And then, you know, to grow up and meet Harley, when I first got in the business, and it was striking when it came off the television and into the studio. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're young, you think you got something going on. You have to keep the machine working, right? Mm-hmm. The show. But you realize how very real it is. And so there's no point in saying anything else. He was intimidating. he could look at you. And he didn't know me from Adam. And so I was just another jack-off radio guy.
Yeah.
Or another potential jack-off television, whatever it was. Like, are you going to tell me it's not real? You know, just like, no, but this dummy over here will.
No, sir, he's been waiting all day.
And he grabbed T, and he choked him out with such a quick and no mercy. When I tell you no mercy, just like he was in the ring, not, you know, this is how it happens. I just reach over here and I bring it in here. Yeah, he shot him. It was on. And then you saw him just go, and it was, I mean, it scared me. Like, I thought, what have I done? This was just supposed to be funny for radio. It's real.
It left a mark.
Yeah.
Hey, Justin Race on the hotline right now.
Our next guest is the son of one of the greatest wrestling champions of all time, a man who was a true king of Kansas City, the late, great, handsome Harley Race, winning over 40 championships around the world over the course of his storied career. He was an 8-time world champion who is considered one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of sports entertainment. But his career was not without its share of tragedy, and that is explored in the latest episode of Feist TV series, The Dark Side of the Ring. Please welcome the son of the man who once ruled our town, Justin Race.
Hey, Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Johnny, how you doing?
Good, good, man. We're just talking about your dad. Like, what a badass your dad was. Like a real-life badass. I guess he was part of wrestling, and wrestling is scripted, and we all know what it is. But he was another level. He was what the legends call a legend.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was listening to what you were talking about just here a few seconds ago, and I know that look that you got.
Yeah.
Whenever I did something wrong, when I was never really punished. He never really, you know, yelled at me or, of course, never slapped me or anything. But if I did something wrong, I got that promo look, and I knew that that was not something I'd do again.
Yeah, for real. Your dad was, for real, intimidating, because you instantly knew, if you had any survival instinct at all, that there's not a barrier between you and him, and this wasn't going to be waited on until television was there, and it wasn't a shtick all the time. Like, if you challenged your dad, he was a man's man.
Yeah, I did try to challenge him. I knew better.
Yeah. But strangers would, though, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, all the time. They think that this is all set up, and he didn't really do what he did in the ring and this and that, and a lot of them paid for it.
Yeah, for real. You know, and it,
I mean, and sometimes it wasn't anything physical. He had that look that the promo look that he'd give on when he's going to go down and wrestle Flair or something like that. And he had that look that just kind of pretty much melted ice.
Yeah, and he was born hard. Like your dad, your grandparents, his parents were sharecroppers.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah, he was up in northwestern Missouri. A little town called Skidmore. It's Skidmore Equipment in Fairfax.
Hold on. Skidmore, also the site of the infamous murder.
Correct. Right around that time.
It makes all the sense in the world now, doesn't it? So for you guys who don't know, here's a side note. Skidmore, they made movies about this. There was a town bully, and this guy ran the town. And by the way, I'm not confusing it. This has nothing to do with your dad, Harley. This is just the town that he grew up in.
Correct. It just happened. Just a coincidence.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of gangs in the town, and that kid tried to run all of them. And Dad had a tattoo. He didn't get in with any of them. He had a tattoo on his arm that said Lone Star.
Wow.
Gangs. That tattoo eventually got covered up by other tattoos that he got to cover up stuff he did by himself when he was a kid that weren't too friendly.
But gangs we're talking in the 50s, right? Like, you know, back when McElroy, the guy who they a bunch of citizens literally dropped this son of a bitch dead in his car and then walked away, and there were no witnesses, and the guy had about 6 different gun bullets in him. Like, it was a rough town.
Shot himself 6 times.
Yeah, he sure did. He was dedicated. But that's how your dad grew up. Like, he grew up sharecropper, poor, hard, and clearly in a community that was not. It was not, Leave It to Beaver.
No. Well, the town had 92 people in it when he was there, born. Now it has 65.
Yeah.
And the big billboard coming into the town says Harley Race was born here. But, yeah, he left home when he was about 14 years old because his parents really couldn't afford to feed him. And he started working on a farm and working for himself. And 2 weeks before he turned 16, he broke into the business.
Isn't that crazy? Self-made.
Didn't even drive, but he could wrestle.
Wow, yeah. But then he ended up being a driver.
Yeah, exactly. For Happy Humphrey.
Yeah, Happy Humphreys, that's right. And because Humphrey was too big to drive, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh, God, 700-800 pounds. Well, there was a story, Dad was driving him around, and Humphrey had to use the restroom. and they'd pull over at a rest stop or whatever, and Humphrey'd go in, come out, I can't use this one. Okay. This happened 3 or 4 times, and my father didn't know why. And finally, Humphrey went in. He's in there for a long time. Dad went in. He's laying on the floor with the toilet broke all around him and just lying there on the floor, cut up. And the reason that he couldn't go to the other restrooms and he just had to try this one was he had to sit on one that was mounted on the floor. He couldn't have one sticking out from the wall because he's too heavy.
Wow. Wow.
So he ended up just giving in and trying one that came out from the wall. And sure enough, it broke off. And there he was.
So if you just joined the show, Justin Race, son of legendary Harley Race, 8-time world champion, Hall of Famer, the documentaries from the dark side of the ring, Life and Legends of Harley Race. This, when wrestling started back then, you'll have to walk us all through it. You know, that was when you had to travel. You were just going place to place, putting on these little shows. And as wrestling became more popular and more organized, promoters started showing up in different regions. And then you could get, you know, superstars. You could build characters.
Correct.
You could get crowds that would come every week to see the storylines unfold.
Correct. And Johnny, one thing I must thank you is you've always been so gracious to Dad, and you helped in that. As he was promoted around the city as a local hero, you really helped in that. And you've always been so gracious and kind to my family, and I appreciate that.
Oh, that's awfully nice of you to say. I loved everything about your dad. And
again, I know you did.
We all have moments where we maybe weren't our very best. But,
sure.
but that's just life, right? But your dad,
oh, absolutely.
Where he came
absolutely.
From and what he built and how he had to handle his life. Like, I don't care who you are. If you don't have admiration for him going after Hulk Hogan because Hogan was trying to move in and take his money.
Sure. Well, what you were saying about the territories, incidentally, you were, I know he was on with you many, many times. I don't know if you remember, but he was on with you one time, and I called in, and I told your screener, you know, another name and whatever, and I ended up getting on, and you said, you know, Steve or whatever my name was, what do you have to say for Harley Race? And I said, hey, Dad. And you started...
I do remember that. God damn,
you
forgot.
Started laughing, and my dad gave some expletives that had to be beeped. But
that's right.
I'll never forget. That was funny. I used to do that to him also when he's cutting promos with, you know, Flair
that's
or whoever.
Right.
He's going, I'm coming down to get you. I'm coming to Greensboro. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I'd stand behind the counter or the camera when I was a little kid and jump up and down and wave my arms around and make him laugh, and he'd have to start the promo over. Finally, he told my mom, Yvonne, get him out of here.
There's all these stories, and you never know what are real Harley stories, what are not real Harley stories. You know, you talk about like the one that if somebody was using anabolic steroids in the gym, he'd walk by and snap off a needle in their butt. And I was like, but I heard it so many times. I was like, maybe it's true.
Yeah, he never shied away from what he felt, and you knew how he felt about things.
Yep.
And yes, the breaking off of he used to have this big old 44 Magnum revolver.
Uh-huh.
Had a 12-inch barrel on it. And he'd load it with one regular, one Magnum around the cylinder. And so he'd go out with a guy and they'd be, you know, target practice, and he'd hold it real loose and he'd shoot it. And the guy'd say, let me try that. And the next one, of course, is the Magnum. The guy'd hold it real loose in his hand. He'd pull the trigger and rip the hide right off his hand.
Dude, it's just, there's something that guys who grew up hard with no viable future, to me, it's like your dad and Evel Knievel share like a genetic code. It's where we started from.
Wow.
And what do we do? How do we build this? Because we're the only ones that are going to help ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And he, in fact, he liked Evel Knievel. We met him many times in the 70s. Yeah. But yeah, it was a different type of mindset, I think. He was more grateful for each time he got to be in front of the fans as opposed to guys nowadays, or it's some around his time, but mostly nowadays, they think that the fans should be grateful to see them. And my father was more grateful to see the fans.
Oh, listen, we all grew up Sunday morning, Memorial Hall, live from Memorial Hall, Bob Geigel, you know, the twin old ladies and everything, you know, and I loved, of course, your dad. And then when Ric Flair would show up, that was just legend. I mean, that was everything, right? And Rufus R. Jones and Bulldog Bob Brown. Just, I mean, my brothers and I tried to break each other's necks, backs, arms, you name it. We had no idea that there was a way to do stuff. I mean, we were really doing, my older brother would atomic pile drive us as hard as he could.
That's not real good for you.
No.
You know, you mentioned Rufus. and I was in third or fourth grade, I guess it was, you did your first like 3 to 5 minute speech in front of the class.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to do it on one of your father's coworkers. So I did it on Rufus. And
great.
I gave a 5 minute talk on Rufus. I was the kids were all like, who is he talking about?
Oh, that's what, so great though, man. Because you know what? And then maybe you show him the freight train out at recess.
Oh yeah, yeah. See if my head's as hard as his.
Oh my God. But all those guys, so that's how you grew up. I have to imagine that there were barbecues and get togethers and
oh yeah. Dad had all the wrestlers over many times after an event or just for New Year's or whatever. But one particular time, Andre was there, and he'd been to our house several times. He used to come in town, actually, not even wrestle. He'd come in town, Dad would take him down to Michael's Big and Tall, and they'd make clothes for him.
Sure, sure.
And so Andre was in for this party, and we had this basement that was like a party basement. It had a bar and a dance floor and a big media room and pool table, whatnot. And there was only two chairs that my dad would let Andre sit in the entire house were the solid oak, the 3 foot long, like old perch church pews.
Yeah.
And there's you big son of a, every other chair in my house, you're great. You can sit there and that's it. So Andre, when he works his way downtown. Now this basement had a 7 foot ceiling. Andre was 7 foot six. So he's bent over and he finally get over to the bench and he'd sit down on it and Dustin, you bring me beer. And that was my job for the rest of the night, was to run back and forth from the beer refrigerator to Andre. And he drank well over 100, maybe 120 tall boys.
Oh, I saw a picture just yesterday. The whole point of this photography was to make you understand spatial perception. And one was a picture of Andre the Giant's hand, and the beer was inside the palm of his hand. A regular size beer fit. It didn't break the top or the bottom. It fit his four fingers.
You could slide a silver dollar through the ring on his ring finger.
That is just insane. And by all accounts, he was a guy's guy and rough around the edges, but a sweet man. Like, that's what I heard.
He was very nice. In fact, I called him Uncle Andre. When he'd come in town, we had a guest room and they had a mattress specially built for Andre when he came down.
Wow.
But his feet still hung off the end of it by, half a foot.
That's so
and
great.
I'd go in there in the morning before school when I was little, elementary school, whatever, and I'd tickle the bottom of his feet and wake him up. Johnson, leave me alone.
Get
up, have breakfast with me, Uncle Andre.
And how big
leave me alone.
Think how big he was to a little kid.
You couldn't appreciate how big that guy was if he didn't meet him. Yeah. There wasn't a door frame on earth that he didn't have to bend over, even double doors, to bend down and go through sideways.
And just, and I know you knew at the time it was special and it was how you were growing up. But as you get older, now you look back and there's like meeting your father in the moments we were together. I always appreciated it. But now I really think back and I think how grateful I am to have brushed that kind of greatness and that legend. And just because it means so much to me. And as time goes on, you realize that they don't make guys like that all the time.
Well, it's interesting. Johnny, I get more interest or actually recognized almost more than I did when he was a star back then. Because, these kids come up to me, I know who your dad is and this and that. And I'm like, you weren't even born when he retired. Why? Yeah. And they say YouTube. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, handsome Harley
Race. So with technology, he's become another a phenomenon again. And ever since this documentary has started, I'm overwhelmed and inundated by phone calls, by emails, by social media, texts, whatever. People just wanting to say, hi, are you really him or whatever? And they're so honored when I answer. I try to answer just like my dad. I respect the fans more than anything. And I try to answer everyone, even if it's with a thumbs up or something, at least they acknowledge,
sure,
acknowledge that I received the message. And they're just so appreciative and they're so honored. And I guess they don't understand the honor is all mine.
And I think your dad would enjoy, or at least he would be okay with the idea of the dark side of the ring. Look, we're all flawed. But your dad never seemed to me to be the kind of guy that shied away from mistakes he made or decisions because they were him and they were real. Not that he wouldn't apologize or feel bad, but, now we have people, I think, that when they do something and it gets caught in the media or whatever it happens, They try to make an excuse. They go to a rehab. They don't take any responsibility. Yeah. That old school guys are like, nope, I did it and it wasn't okay. And but that's who they were, right? Like they always own their mistakes.
I did it. I'm proud of it. I learned from it. And let's move on.
Yeah. No, he was something
else. That was it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You know, you mentioned when the WWF came in, or at the time WWF, and broke up all the regions and this and that. That's one of the reasons that my father was so respected in the business and by fans, is when he the whole time he was world champion, when he'd be in town, so quote unquote off.
Yeah.
Any town that was within a reasonable drive, six, 7 hours of Kansas City, he would go there, because back then they didn't have pay-per-view. We didn't have cable. We didn't have, you know, all these different, and of course, the internet and phones to see this, to see, you know, the world champion. He believed everyone had an opportunity, should have an opportunity to see the world champions. I've been to every one horse town in Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, Kansas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, wherever. And he'd go there and he'd wrestle their local hero, a town of 400 people, and 399 of them were crammed into the high school gym where they were wrestling.
Yep.
And he'd let that guy beat the heck out of him for 58 minutes.
Yep.
And then, of course, he'd win in the end. But when he left that town, all the people there could say that their local boy almost beat the world champion.
That's so great. And it meant and so, so much
that's where
in those
he
days.
Became so endeared by the wrestlers and whatever, is that he put his body out there all the time for the fans' enjoyment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I grew up. I moved here when I was 11 years old, but I was born in Memphis, Tennessee. So I used to. I got some redneck relatives down there. My Aunt Barbara and Uncle Butch, true story, had 3 kids: Barry, Brandy, and BJ. So you see where I'm going with this. So I would sit on my Uncle Butch's lap, or I'd sit on the couch and he'd drink PBR with salt on the rim, and he'd look at me and he'd say it every time like I'd never heard the joke before, and I was just a little kid. He'd go, "There's 3 kings: Elvis Presley, Jerry Lawler, and Jesus Christ." that's how the whole thing went. And you know, that was, they took it so serious. It was real. Then you think about what wrestling really means throughout the world. You know, it's you know, some of the greatest works, I mean, all the way up to the Letterman work, you know, with Jerry Lawler. And and it's just, we love it. My grandfather in England at one time was a wrestler. He was always a ham and egg guy. But even, my mom even told me he was doing it because they loved it in England so much. Like the world over, every country, no matter where you go, for whatever reason, there are these warriors, whether they're luchadors or they're high flyers. Every country has them. Everybody.
The Greco-Romans. Yeah. I mean, wrestling was the first original. It was the original Olympic sport.
Yep.
In the BC times, 500 BC, whatever it was. And, you know, so it's been around longer than pretty much people didn't even compete running against each other before they competed beating the heck out of each other.
Yeah. Oh, your dad, if you're trying to show Justin Race, son of Harley Race. And, man, I remember the day I found your dad had passed away, and, it was a really sad day because it's part of your childhood that leaves, you know, and for us.
Yeah. Well, I had, I mean, back, you know, what I was talking about honored to meet people. I've met so many people in my life, very important people, whether it be CEOs, officials of government, you know, people that are commanding people. And when they'd find out who I was or, you know, somehow that would come up, I got to see these powerful, powerful men and women kind of melt before me and turn into a little boy or a little girl again, just for a moment. And they'd start the nostalgia. You know, I used to watch your dad Sunday morning and this and that. My dad always told me, he said, if someone recognizes you, give them their, if you're not late for something, give them their 5 minutes. Let them talk, let them ask questions, let them whatever, because those people are the ones that put you through college. Those people are the ones that put food on the table. Those people are the ones that, you know, enable you to go on vacation. Those people paying to see me wrestle are who enable you to live your life. So be nice to them and let them talk.
How did he do with guys like Vince McMahon overall? Like, I just feel like that in my heart, and I don't know, I don't have any interest or any knowledge of this. I don't have any experience, but I feel like they're just not the same, and I don't feel like your dad would have loved him. Maybe I'm 100% wrong.
Of course, there was animosity before Dad went to WWF when that battle came about with the NWA and the WWF. Vince McMahon Sr. was a wonderful man, and Dad was obviously very close to him. And Vince was the energetic son that wanted to take over the world. And so, yeah, they had their moments. They had some quite dark. In fact, Dad almost put him to sleep too. One time.
Forever or just for a moment?
Oh, well, he told me later, you know, when the battle was kind of still going on between WWF and the NWA, he said, one more second, I could have just clinched a little harder and all this had been over.
Yeah, man, it was real. Like, those guys, they have to know that when you work so hard and you come from nothing, you will fight to the last breath in your chest to hold on to what you've created.
And you appreciate every time you do it.
Yeah. No, he really was.
That was him. He, you were talking about Flair, with him and Flair and whatever, a funny story. Dad bought one of those Jeep Wagoneers back in the 70s. You remember those?
Sure.
They had the little switch in the glove box. You could turn it on emergency and all four tires pulled. It was like a tank.
Yep.
Well, Flair really liked it, so he bought it from Dad. Dad bought a new one. And we left an arena somewhere in Carolinas. And Flair pulled up the stoplight. Dad pulled up behind him. He looked over at me. He said, I want to see how powerful this new one is. So he kind of hooked bumpers with Flair and pushed him right through the stop sign. The stoplight. And of course there's a cop there, two cops, three cops, and they all come roaring up expecting to find some crazy kids or something. And they walked up, they saw Flair, then they saw that boy, the tickets and the law enforcement went out the window and it became autograph theft.
Yes, of course, man. Take pictures with
And after, you know, all that's finished, we get back in the car and we go driving away, and my dad says his favorite phrase to me, don't tell your mother.
I understand you heard that a lot.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm putting together a book that's entitled Don't Tell Your Mother. And the title is exactly what the title says it all.
Dude, legend has it, that, and again, you never know what's real and what's legend, that, you know, many times in the heyday, your dad, if he was out drinking, if he was at a bar, there'd be one jackhole who had to test him, and he would just get laid out.
Well, that one guy for many years in the early 70s when we lived in Tampa was Hogan.
Yeah.
Terry Hogan used to come into this biker bar that my dad, Hulk Hogan, my dad used to frequent, and he'd poke and rib and try to annoy my father, and dad would turn around, hit him, and knock him out the front door and go back to drinking his beer.
That's great.
And after, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 times of this happening, Dad looked up and he said, you're serious, aren't you? You betcha, brother. Yeah. And so he trained him how to wrestle.
Wow. But,
yeah. Blair was one of those guys that, you know, everyone wanted to pick a fight with him. There was even a guy one time that he was walking, I think he was in an airport, and he's just walking down the concourse or whatnot, and someone purposely just stuck their foot out and tripped him. And, of course, he went down and he got up, but at that time, as a professional, he couldn't really defend himself because they could sue him because he was a professional.
Sure.
So, you know, he had to grit his teeth and he'd just give that guy the look like, you know, the guy pretty much melted, that promo look. and that was enough. But yeah, people were always trying to pick. It's like, why are you that stupid? Really?
Well, and listen, it was a different time, and women absolutely loved handsome Harley Race.
Yeah. Well, they didn't call him handsome or nothing.
Yeah, and there's no way this story is true, but I can tell you, I can't tell how many times I've heard a story about traveling between shows, a female midget wrestler and your dad, and a trooper coming up thinking he was the only one in the car until he sat up.
Yeah.
Have you heard the same?
Oh, yeah, I heard that story, too. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, so look, I don't know that anything is true, because, you know, listen, half the stories we hear about legends are things that are put together from other parts and pieces of stories and other people kind of embellishing stuff. But your dad was such a legend. All of it seemed like it could be true.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and more especially nowadays with the availability of information on your telephone. You know, oh, I saw it in the internet. It must be true.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And there's stuff made up all the time. I take it with a grain of salt. I mean, you have to. If I dwelled on every story that put him in a bad light or whatever, I live a miserable life. I focus, as like I said, about what I'm writing. I try to focus on the funny side and the good side, because we had a lot of good times.
Listen, they didn't know him. You knew him. So
your perception's
correct. Like, you knew who the man was and the things he did and the good, the rough, the again, the human part of handsome Harley Race. And he was
legend. I remember him on, you know, Saturday mornings when I was a little boy, playing Santa Claus and playing golf and going, you know, just hanging out. But my most memorable times with my dad were usually when, like I said, he'd wrestle in the little towns around the Kansas City area when he was off, so to speak, from being a world champion. And after he'd finish at night, he'd get a 12-pack or so of beer, sometimes more, and smoke a summer sausage and mild, sharp cheddar cheese. And the whole way from that town home or from that town to another town or whatever, I sat up in front. My mom was exhausted. You know, she'd sleep in the back of the van, and I'd sit up front with my dad, and we'd just talk, and I was the bartender and the
sausage
cutter and cheese cutter, and he was the driver.
Mm.
And those were the times that really we had a good time. You know, incidentally, I was telling your producer, Jake, he bought my mom a Porsche in 1977. And back then, they didn't have mass manufacture or whatever. He bought a car like that. It was made in Germany and shipped here.
Okay.
So this car arrives, and 69 Highway, where all that construction is right now between like 119th and all that was just a highway. There was nothing around there.
Yeah, it was just country road, sure.
Yeah. And Dad used to call it the Autobahn because the Johnson County police didn't have enough patrol cars to go out that far. So we get out on 69 Highway in that Porsche, and off we go. And when you see a police officer at that speed, what are you going to do? So
just keep going
by the police officer who went.
Right.
And you remember the movie Smokey and the Bandit.
Sure.
Well, a couple miles up the road, they had a couple of police cars, you know, blocking the roadblock, blocking the freeway, and all the cops on the opposite side with their guns drawn over the top of the hoods and the trunks of the cars.
Hold on. That's you and your dad are in the Porsche, and this is what's happening?
Yeah. So we come pulling up. You know, you see this. You're like, well, I got to stop now. So he stops, and the police officers kind of semicircle, like 10 of them kind of came toward the car in a semicircle. All their hands were right on their hips, ready to draw that gun. And one of them broke forward. He walked up. He looks down into the driver's side window, and he just shakes his head and raises his eyebrows. He said, Mr. Race, do you have any idea how fast you were going? And Dad, being Dad, said, well, the speedometer was pegged at 150. And the police officer goes, this was back in, you know, during the 70s when it was all 55 everywhere.
Yeah.
The police officer says, sir, you're doing 163 miles an hour. You were tripling the speed limit.
That's amazing.
And Dad says, wow, I saw you too. I was letting off.
Dude, it's just
being Harley. He's not going to lie to him.
Yeah. And fearless in, I did it. You know I did it. Let's talk about it.
Exactly what you alluded to earlier. So the police officer said, well, sir, you know, now that it's broken, the speed limits are, or, you know, it's a new car, I'm breaking it in, he said. And police officer said, well, now that it's broken, the speed limit's around 55. Would you mind signing some autographs? No, not at all. So he gets out, he signs some autographs. We turn around, come back north toward home. No ticket, no nothing. He looks over at me, don't tell your mother.
You got to write the book. I hope it comes out soon. I can't. I would be the first one in line to read Don't Tell Your Mother.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm working hard on it. This documentary has taken up so much of my time in the last, year, but several months. And so I'm kind of digging back in now. I'm going to get it finished.
You have a, I want to ask you this before I let you go. Do you have a bunch of your dad's like memorabilia, the belts, the different things? Like, do you have certain things you look at, you have at your home that just, it's your super memories of your dad?
Certain things I have. Most of them wouldn't really mean anybody else but me. I do a lot of his, like the belt, the NWA replica belt and all that. I went ahead and left that at his school in Troy, Missouri.
Yep.
Because it's still the Harley Race Academy, even though Harley Race obviously isn't there anymore. And so I, you know, that's kind of a museum for me. I'd rather not be selfish and have it sitting in my room when I could let thousands of people see it every day or year or whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
So I like Dad would have done. I give it to the fans.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. It's just I could do this all day.
I know. I've always enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, dude, I love it. Justin Race, man, stay in touch. Everybody, you guys got to see the documentary From Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah, it's on Vice TV. You just have to check your local listings. It's called Dark Side of the Ring, Harley Race. And it'll be on, you know, it's a documentary on Vice TV. It'll be on many times a day, many days, months, weeks, whatever, on forward from now. But yeah, check it out. It was really done well. I appreciated their candor. I appreciated their respect. I think everyone really enjoyed it, especially, you know, the hometown hero, the people in Kansas City. They're going to enjoy it because they, like you said, Sunday morning, it was Harley Race.
Oh, man, he's pure Kansas City and bigger. I mean, he's worldwide wrestling legend, but it's really is something to realize he's Kansas City. You know, he grew up just yeah. north, and he always stayed here.
Yeah, a lot of the messages I get from people that I don't know, or maybe I knew back then, but I don't remember anymore now, are always just little stories of meeting at McDonald's or meeting at a Tanner, you know, coaches, something like that. Just, you know, I ran into your dad here and he gave me an autograph and he was so nice and all. And it's almost like they're speaking to me as if we're friends, which is fine with me, of course. Yeah. But you know, they're not scared. They're not, well, they were scared originally when they first met him, but after he calmed, you know,
yeah,
he had that big old hand and that warm, big hand grip and that deep voice, and people really cozied up to him in a hurry.
Oh, his hands were like stone. I remember that. I remember seeing his forehead and everything, just being like staring at him so up close from a guy who you only saw on television as a bigger than life super, you know, star, a superhero.
And yeah, his forehead. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, just, but to be the first time I can remember like it was yesterday, the first time I was within 3 feet of him. And I'm looking him in the eye, and I'm looking at his forehead, like, and I'm just, it was hard to wrap my head around that. He's real. He's here right now.
Yeah. Well, his forehead kind of resembled hamburger.
Yeah, yeah, from all the razor blades in the tape, right?
Yeah, after a while, it just gets to where that, it didn't take much, a punch or two, and that would start bleeding.
Dude, it was just
tell people, you know, and I send photos out of him all bloody and this and that, and I'm standing next to him. My mom and I are standing next to him. I'd write, interestingly enough, this is a successful night at my house.
And I hope you have a publisher for the book. Do you really think that it'll come out in the next couple of years?
Oh, yeah. I'd like to have it out this year.
Excellent. Excellent, man. I can't wait. Justin, I'm going to put you on with Jake, but brother, thank you so much for sharing the stories about your dad. I really... It was an honor to meet him the times we did and talk on the phone. And I loved him. He was incredible.
Well, John, he loved you too. He really enjoyed coming on with you and talking to you. You're always so gracious, like I said, and respectful. And I thank you for all the things you've done for me.
Oh, brother. Stay right there. Thank you, brother. Thank you. FNG loves wrestling.
He's floating over there.
I know. It was I. Harley liked me.
Yeah. He didn't like many people.
And no, I just, I, dude, You guys couldn't see it, but I had that S Eaton grin when he was saying that, because mm-hmm. I was like, Harley said, you know, because you never know, right?
Of course.
And but he was always so great to us. But I will tell you, there was never a time I wasn't aware that you could screw up and get smacked. Like, and that is an absolute truth. And now, that might have been an unwarranted fear.
Right.
Like, he might not have ever done it no matter what.
Sure.
But I never didn't feel like, hey, man, this dude...
Don't act up.
Well, and you never wanted to because you admired him so much. Mm-hmm. But you just felt like it was always on the edge of like, hey, man, he was the original F around and find out guy. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.